Welcome to the Three Wise Men of Divorce, Money, Psych, and Law podcast. Sit down with the California divorce experts, financial divorce consultant Mark Hill, psychologist Scott Weiner, and attorney Sean Weber for a frank and casual conversation about divorce, separation, co-parenting, and the difficult decisions real people like you face during these tough times. We know that if you are looking at divorce or separation, it can be scary and overwhelming. With combined experience of over 70 years in divorce and conflict management, we are here for you and look forward to helping by sharing our unique ideas, thoughts, and perspectives on divorce, separation, and co-parenting.
Mark, we've met a lot of personalities in this business, haven't we?
We have indeed.
And sometimes there's personalities that they go through it really well, you know, the divorce process, and there's some personalities that struggle more than others.
That's very true.
So you know somebody that knows a thing or two about personalities, don't you?
I do indeed. In fact, it's our guest today, Dr. Richard Levack from Del Mar, California. Full disclosure, my long-term friend, known him since college days. Richard is a personality expert, psychologist, media personality, and has spent his life working with the aspects of personality and how personalities interact. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mark. Thank you to all of you. Yeah.
Bet. Thanks for coming along. So I guess something that's been going through my mind, thinking about personalities is, you know, you always hear these personality quizzes that people take online to see what kind of person they are, what kind of personality they have.
Right.
I was wondering, you know, when you're looking at people that are getting married or people that are getting divorced, are there particular personality combinations or how do you think about that?
That's a great question. You know, when you think of personality, some of you are going to be dog people. If you're a dog person, if you love dogs, you know that dogs as a whole are very different from cats. They're very different from horses. But within the dog kingdom, you, for example, would never start with a golden retriever if you wanted a mean dog. If you wanted a seeing eye dog, you wouldn't start with a terrier. Because their personality just isn't genetically, terriers are high strung, not all of them, but as a whole, a terrier has a certain image in your mind of a personality. A golden retriever, very hard to make a golden retriever mean. It's hard to make a German shepherd passive. So humans are born with a core type of personality. There are Labradors who are people pleasers, they're agreeable, they like to get along, they hate conflict. And then there are people who are kind of on edge and waiting to see how you're going to mistreat them and ready to kind of argue. And they're kind of more argumentative, injustice collectors. And then there are people who are energetic and they complete people's sentences for them and they run late and they overcommit. So within human beings, there's not that many personality types. And then what happens is when you get married, you want, the research shows that generally you want people who have similar interests, values, and somewhat similar personalities, unless you're both narcissists, unless you're both injustice collectors.
I like that term.
Right.
Always keeping score.
I have a saying in my mediations when I'm working with people, fair is the F word.
Yes.
And I have people that are always looking for an injustice.
That is exactly right. And with people like that, you can hear it in their language because they are constantly subtly judging. Well, as I've said so many times to him, instead of well, what I'd like to say now. Well, there he goes. You can never trust him, you know. So you're right that there are certain personality types, and the research shows there is a classic personality type associated with divorces that never finish.
Keep going.
Inquiring minds want to know.
I think I know some of those people.
Let's hear more. Tell me more about that personality type, please.
Well, that personality type is a high energy, because you need the energy to keep going. Very injustice collecting. They have a sense of how they have been wounded and unfairly treated, and they feel it is their moral obligation to teach the other person a lesson. And they forget about their own best interests because they'd rather cut off their nose to spite their face. Because you wounded me and you can't be allowed to get away with it. And justice is on my side.
Sounds like a little like an insight deficit there with a there's a phrase that was on the tip of my tongue. It is to, we used to talk about psychological mindedness.
Yes.
That it requires a certain amount of self-insight, a certain amount of, at least an inclination to battle the natural hubris that we all have, you know, that the native small end narcissism that we all have as beings, you know,
right.
Kind of go, well, you know.
No, you're exactly right. The ability to self-reflect.
Yeah. So that battler, okay, you know what we do in our work. We mediate these divorces. We do a divorce collaboration to do this. When we bump into that person, and I'm going to argue that we've bumped into him and her any number of times. Mm-hmm. Oh God, yes. I mean, I could just start in. We could, but is there some way?
Right.
Can we either satisfy that person by giving them some sense that we get the injustice? Can that work? Or does that feed the machine? What can we do with him or her?
That's a great question. Absolutely. That if you have somebody who you can see is breaking their own toys to punish someone, if you have someone, as you describe them, who doesn't self-reflect but is on a mission to punish the other, I think if you can take them aside and give some time to look, you clearly have been terribly wounded by this person. And allow them to deflate that energy by engaging the anguish, and that you show empathy to their anguish. Yes, I see it. No, that the way he did it, I can see how that was a terrible wound. How could he lie to you and make you feel you're crazy when you kept accusing him of cheating? That was so painful. It made you feel like you were losing your mind. No wonder you're so angry. I get it, terrible. And you can keep punishing him, but it will cost you this much. It's not fair. It's terribly unfair that he's not being punished. So I think it's
absolutely. So go with that, go with their process to some extent.
Yes.
But separate it out, what we call caucusing.
Oh,
take that person out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, something we do as mediators, and this is probably low level compared to some of the stuff you're discussing here, is when we have the repeater, it's like the airplane that'll never land.
Yeah.
A good, nice, well-placed summary of what's bothering them can really help kind of get them to want to land.
That's right.
Even if they don't land. You know, just kind of, okay. Like what you said, just kind of, oh, wow, I really hear what you're saying, that that was very painful for you. And this was that injustice that you're describing.
That's right. And if it, that if I was in your spot, seeing it the way you did, I would be outraged too. I would. And I get it. And and it's so painful. And not only that, but now you have to give him half or give her half. It doesn't feel right, does it?
Well, and then I think of the person that's on the other side of that, you know, and they're like, I just want to give them something so they can know that I treated them fairly. And I always want to tell this person, there is nothing you can give this person that that's will right. be enough.
Hmm? Yep, right.
Don't,
so
don't even try.
I had a guy who gave all of the equity in the family home to the wife because he felt guilty for an affair that he'd been having for 20 years. And he got no credit for it at all.
Oh, yeah.
That's
not one iota. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's, well, what is the advice you would have for the person that's on the other side of that?
Well, that's a, another good question, which is what advice do I have for the guy who gives everything hoping to get forgiveness?
Yeah, right. Or the gal, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hoping to get forgiveness.
To get forgiveness or some gratitude that at least now you're not being a cad. And maybe what you have to tell that guy is, look, she's so hurt and angry, she just won't give an inch. And it's, but down the road, maybe she'll know. And are you, you're doing that for your own guilt. It's a wonderful thing you're doing, but you might not be able to expect gratitude.
So reality check.
Yeah.
You might not be able to expect gratitude. I think it's a really good point.
Yeah.
You know, if this somehow makes you feel better, that's different. But if you're doing this because you think you're going to get some kind of reciprocity in feelings from this person.
Yeah. Don't expect this to be transactional. This is personal to you.
And I might say to the wounded party, look, yes, he cheated. He lied. He deeply hurt you. You are very angry. And he wants to give more than he needs to show his remorse. You can resist being grateful because you're so angry. It's going to be a little harder for him to give you more if you do that.
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I get
it'll be harder for him to give you more.
It'll be harder for him to give you more if you refuse to be grateful because you're so angry at the injustice. You know, it's such a terrible thing. You're doing such a great job to try to take what in the end is a catastrophe. People have gone through all these nicks and bruises. Most of them are angry and hurt. And you're trying to soothe them so they don't damage each other further and damage themselves. And it's unsatisfying. Very rarely is it a clean deal, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a jagged, it's a jagged ending.
Yeah, that's true. And every now and then we'll get that moment. You know, we call it the transformative moment. Like today we had a case where that happened and somebody was, the person said, you know, I really don't think he's trying to hurt me. I don't think he's trying
to mislead me. That's what she said. And Sean stopped the conversation.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
And said, let's sit with that for a minute. Now, sir, did you hear that? Yes,
that was
I did.
Perfect. Yeah.
Thank you. And he said thank you and acknowledged it.
That's
and
perfect.
And that was really wonderful. But the fact that Sean stopped the process and said, let's sit with that for a minute. And
that's
there was
great.
A silence.
Well, yeah, let
really
them sit
powerful.
In their silence for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, that was great, Sean. That was perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
He's good at that. I must say, he's really good at that.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
And what I sometimes do is, you know, you're in this awful moment where you've tried this, you've pushed here, that didn't work, you try there, and you're really stuck and it's hot and sweaty in the room, sometimes I'll go, well, let me think about this. You know, what I would love you to say, if I could get it, if I could get it.
If I could get it.
But you don't have to say it, but I'd love it if you felt it. If I could get it, which is, gosh, I'm angry too, and I'm mad right now, but I really am sorry for what I did. I would love that, but you don't have to say that. And then yes. Sometimes people will say, well, I do.
I think I will say that. Damn
it. And I go, that's great.
You kind of plant that seed then, don't you?
Exactly.
Like, don't think about pink elephants.
Perfecting the script.
Exactly.
We used to do that in the hospital sometimes. We'd actually do psychodrama like that. And we'd get, you know, one person behind the patient, one person behind somebody being their mother. And we do the script the way it ought to goddamn be.
You know? That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. That's exactly right.
The layperson listening to this, they might think, well, that seems awfully manipulative. But I think, you know, what people need to understand is that what we're trying to do is help people get out of their own way.
I think that's right. That when you, and this is a critical thing you've said, when people are very stressed, which a divorce by definition is extremely stressful, your whole life, kids, money, everything is on the line, your focus of attention narrows. That when we see danger, we are not looking at the roses. We are pinpoint looking at a tiger that's threatening us. So in a divorce, people's focus of attention becomes so narrow, they forget their humanness. They forget everything. So it's not manipulative to remind them of who they could be, and they can choose to remember that or not.
Be reminded of consequences too, in a subtle way. One of the things we often say is, we will say, we want you to think in terms of what story your children will tell about their parents' divorce.
Great.
Because that focuses on a broader, it takes you outside of yourself to people. Yeah. The one thing that clients always agree on, almost, they still love their children, both of them.
That's exactly
so
right.
So there's a united thing there. And if, you know, the old thing, will you be able to dance at your daughter's wedding?
Right. That's great, that kind of Mark. Stuff. I think that's right. That broadens the focus of attention for a moment.
Right. Yeah.
Or one of the questions I ask is, would you like to be able to go to bed at night without worrying about what your ex is going to do next?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then, and so wouldn't that be nice? Let's kind of sit there and think about what that would be like for you. How would that change your life?
Oh,
right.
I would be able to sleep finally.
Right.
Okay. So maybe we can change our strategy so that it works better.
I think those are great comments to help people understand a broader picture and what their mission is. That in a divorce, the mission is, if it's possible, to separate with some degree of respect and love.
Mm-hmm. And be able to co-parent if there are children.
That's right.
To have the battle fought over the last thing that you've got to have contact around.
Well,
that's right.
And one thing we know from the research is that what screws the kids up in a divorce is not necessarily a divorce, but it's the parental conflict that the kids are exposed to.
I think that's exactly right. You know, when people ask me, well, I'm going to stay with my husband or wife till the kids go to college because I don't want to screw them up. And what I say is, look, it's exactly what you said, Sean. You will not screw up your kids if after the divorce, their life is the same or better.
Mm.
What kids lose in a divorce is what affects them. If after a divorce, your mom moves into a two-bedroom apartment and is dating every night, and you don't have enough money and you have to change schools, and your dad and mom continue to fight, it's a terrible divorce. But if after a divorce, you stay in the same house, your mom continues to be a mom, your dad is available, your financial wherewithal hasn't collapsed, you're going to the same school, and there's no fighting, or both parents seem happier, the divorce was a good thing. Because I sometimes talk to people who say, yeah, my parents divorced when I was 12. It was much better afterwards.
I've heard that that phrase, I'd rather be from a broken home than in one.
Yeah, that's another great phrase, exactly. Yeah, so for your listeners, work on your marriage. Don't give up, and try to communicate. But if you're married to a sociopath, someone who breaks the law, the rules, someone who's alcoholic or a drug addict and won't get help and is ruining the family finances, of course you should separate, get a divorce. But generally, if you're going to get a divorce, try to, through your guys' counseling, understand that you do not want to get into a fight to punish the other or to try to resolve issues that you couldn't resolve in the divorce. See the divorce as something you're going to do better than you did the marriage. And that's why you guys are there.
That's so great. Well said. You know, I try to get people away from the past. You know, by the time they've come to my office, we've got a broken marriage usually, right?
And that's right.
I try to get them out of these, you know, rehearsing what happened and get them right into, let's make proposals for the future. What are we going to do now?
Right.
And help them be present as opposed to just kind of wallowing in the same dysfunctions and fight that got them to my door in the first place.
Right.
Richard, so what are you seeing in your practice with couples under this current environment we're in? I have a good friend and colleague who's in your industry who basically, when we were chatting offline and being a little irreverent, you know, I said, boy, the intensity of couples right now is pretty high, you know, and she says, well, Mark, if you think about it, you'd have to be sort of highly aroused to decide to get a divorce within a pandemic. That's not the way she put it, but the concept was that if you weren't sort of at that breaking point, why would you do it now when it's so challenging and difficult from perhaps other reasons?
That's right. I think there's a number of people who are forcibly married because of the pandemic. They want to get a divorce. They're afraid to. So there's tremendous stress there, people feeling trapped. I think you're right that anybody who says, no, I cannot tolerate this anymore, and I'm willing to do it in a pandemic, they're pretty stressed.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening, Mark, is that there are people who are now, I've heard this kind of statement, I'm with my husband and I listen to him in the other room working, and he is so nice to the people on the phone and he's such an asshole to me. I can't believe it. He's capable of being, he was so good. And I could hear him with one of his female salespeople and he called a hun. I can't, you know, so watching each other at home and finding out how you can really be and so on adds a level of stress that can sometimes make a situation unbearable.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you have the folks that they're just stuck.
Yeah.
We saw this with the last financial crisis where they couldn't sell their houses because they were underwater. And so they were cohabiting for longer than they probably should have. And then we would see all kinds of complications related to that.
That's right.
I think we're seeing it again with COVID, where they're kind of forced into this environment. They're not sure what's happening with the economy. They're not sure what's happening with politics. There's so many stressors coming from so many different directions, and it's a pressure cooker.
I think that's right. It really is. People are starting, as you've seen on the internet, people who are fragile when there is discord in the political situation, when there's turmoil, where there's uncertainty, and then there's stress in their own life, small things can get them to unravel. And we're seeing people who have meltdowns much more than we used to, and have much less bandwidth, to use a radio wave kind of concept. They just can't tolerate any more stress on some small thing. They spill their coffee and they blow up. So there is enormous stress on people, which filters down to their marriage. If it was already shaky and their ability to communicate was already fractured.
It's already, so you're saying it's already kind of a powder keg, just there's kindling ready.
That's right.
And it just needs one tiny little spark. It doesn't even need to be something that significant.
That's
to
right.
just really set people off. Yeah.
So I think what you're doing, which is to say, let's calm down the bitterness. Let's help you get through this. I love some of your comments, like, how do you want to sleep at night? How do you want your kids to remember the divorce? Do this better than you did the marriage. You've got a chance to do something really well together, and let's do it well. It's an invaluable thing, because what I hear from some of my people who go through divorces and don't come to you, they'll get, there's a couple of people in town, attorneys, who make things so much worse. And
we can name them.
Yeah.
You've probably seen their billboards.
Yeah. Yeah. When the gloves come off.
Right. Those folks.
Yeah. We know them.
I mean, what a terrible thing to incite people who are vulnerable into what they can easily do, which is attack each other. Terrible. So I really appreciate what you're doing.
It is traditional, though, but that's the history of this. I mean, adversarial law is, excuse me, Mark, excuse me, Richard, the English system. It's you, Brits. Yeah. And the Scotsmen are even worse.
Yeah. You know, that crucible of justice they talk about.
Yeah.
And that's great when you're talking about a capital crime or something like that. But when you're talking about families and putting people into an adversarial system with a crucible, that's just that's a recipe for a really unhealthy end to this marriage.
Well, what's the name of a legal event of this kind? It's called a trial.
Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm. It's called a trial. And originally that meant that they were put through some sort of ordeal, either ducked underwater to see if they would, or trial by fire, that was fun, or trial by combat, that was also a good sport. Hmm? That's worse than rugby.
Right. And I've seen a lot of attorneys too that, they do what we call retainer talk.
Right.
And that is, I'm going to get you into my office and I'm going to really stoke you up.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you just what I need for you to just pay my retainer.
Right. You know?
And overpromise.
Right.
Without getting enough information. And that does tremendous damage to people.
And the overpromise is the subtle but very loud suggestion that this person is going to get justice. And the justice is what they think is fair. And that's a terrible thing to do to people.
You really made something click in my mind there.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark.
It prevents settlement because it sets unrealistic expectations. If you're told you're going to get everything and then they tell you you can only have half, that's a loss.
That's right. That's right.
That's well said, Mark.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's that myth of justice. It's the same reason I tell people fair is the F word. And that is because what you perceive as fair is different from what the other person perceives as fair.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
And it's impossible to reconcile those two. So then what? And so I'm always telling people, well, this woman with the blindfold and the scales of justice, she's a figment. Yeah.
Right.
And she's an ideal that we cannot possibly reach in a family court, because
that's right.
There's only, you know, you're splitting a pie in half, and it's going to be less than 50%, because you're also, you can't pull your resources anymore. You're going to have a reduction in your standard of living. You know that, Mark.
Yeah.
What happens to their standard of living?
Divide by two. It's kind of,
it's divide by three.
It's arithmetic. Yeah. Or three if you're going to battle it in court.
Yeah. Right.
And it's so unsatisfying. Even when you win, it's unsatisfying.
Right. Yeah, we've had that.
That's what people don't understand, is that there are no victories in family court. When you win, you often lose.
Yeah. Right.
Well, principles are expensive.
Right. And I think to go back to what you are doing and this difficult but rewarding job you're doing, which is to factor in your client's emotional scar tissue by bringing in psychologists and attorneys who understand both sides of the equation, and walking people through that this is going to be painful. If you do it well, you will benefit financially, and you will feel not great, but you will feel better than if you do it badly. And so I think that the more people can understand your process, they will see the enormous emotional benefits, as well as the financial benefits and the benefits for the kids.
That's a huge endorsement.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful endorsement. I'm in my mind winding back to the earlier things you said, Richard, about those certain sorts of individuals that are collecting the memories and the history of hurt and this, that, and the other, and somehow need to re-regulate.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of some cases that we've had, Sean, in which essentially, I have to say, we failed to get we got it on paper. We got the process done on paper, but it kept coming back because we did not have the power, the authority, the control, whatever, to delimit the continuity of that quasi justice-seeking process.
We had two cases, you and I, that got all the way to settlement, but they didn't have that finality because there was a person in that group that was an injustice collector.
Exactly.
They could not let go. You know, and compromise, I was always talked about as a bad word, but I think, you know, it means you're giving something up.
That's right. And I think to answer your question is that injustice collector is a fixed personality type. They often had a parent that was punitive, loving, but punishing and judgmental. You were bad, you need to be punished. And sometimes with a religious justification or just a strict black and white view of right and wrong. So then the child, one way the child can deal with it is be a rebel and say, screw you, I don't care about your rules. Another way is to say, I am going to be above criticism. I am going to be so good that I am above possible punishment and criticism. Oh, but if I have to do that, look at that person, they're doing something wrong. They need to be punished because look at how hard I'm working to not do what they're doing. And that childhood conditioning can lead to a type of person that's very black and white, very moralistic, there's a right way and a wrong way, very judgmental of others, and does not feel satisfied unless someone is punished for what they did. It's and you can see how that and then add a little energy, high energy, and add a little hypersensitivity to taking things personally, and you've got someone who spends their life, in a sense, undoing or trying to deal with the childhood where they had experienced punitive, judgmental parenting.
Wow, that is so powerful what you're saying. I mean, you could also apply that to what we see in our public discourse. Where, you know, we have this pandemic and people want to blame somebody. Somebody needs to pay for this.
Well, sure. I have to ask Dr. Levesque. So, no, I don't have to.
Oh, come on. You started it.
Oh, well, I'm making the chart taller when I'm trying to analyze the LF and K scales on a certain personage.
But you're exactly right. It is that there is an elevation on the Lie scale. And I think this is technical. So you'll probably want to take it out of if you edit this. But the L scale shows elevations on that show a naivete and a moral rigidity. And then mild elevations on the paranoia scale. The paranoia scale measures three components. One is moral self-righteousness. I am good, people are bad. It measures exquisite sensitivity. Like, oh, how could you... You did that on Mother's Day. You must have known what you were doing. No, he was just blind. He's just so disorganized. He didn't realize it was Mother's Day. Don't you make excuses for him. He knew it was Mother's Day. And that's why he made his car break down. So I couldn't see the kid.
He made his car break down. That is so correct. And they'll create these narratives, right?
I want the third one, Richard.
And the third one, which is counterintuitive, is naivete. Now, the reason it's on the paranoia scale is because the person has developed this perspective that people do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because they're afraid of punishment. People are moral and do the right thing because they're good, moral people. People who do the wrong thing are not misguided. They are willful. They are doing bad things because they're evil and therefore they need punishment. So it's a kind of rigid view of the world that's very black and white, punitive, and wounded by the cruelty of what you did. And I need to therefore not only protect myself, but punish you to protect you from other people.
I've always associated the paranoid scale with projection also. How do you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. So the tendency is, I'm not angry. I'm just standing up to you and I'm punishing you because you deserve it. I'm not angry.
It hurts me more than it hurts you.
Defending. Yeah. It's not me, it's you.
Yeah, I have no choice.
Yeah, I have no choice.
I have no choice.
Want everybody listening to this, whoever is listening, to understand this was entirely a hypothetical discussion.
Yeah.
No, but yes. You know, you're making me think of things that we learned in early, you know, my early education about conflict resolution and the Kohlberg theory of moral development.
Yes.
You know, where you have these different stages of, and the very first stage is very naive, very much punishment and obedience, kind of an orientation. You obey the rules, and then you move on up the scales until you get to a place where it's about principle and conscience.
Yes. That's exactly right. So for example, a six-year-old child, when told which is worse, Johnny accidentally spilled ink on mom's nice desk and it made a big mess, versus Anna who took somebody's piece of chewing gum willfully took it. Which act is worse? They think the one that created the bigger mess is worse because it's bigger. They don't understand the moral issue.
Intent, yeah.
The moral intent.
Issue. Yeah, that you had this in your mind to willfully take somebody's property.
Mens rea, Sean.
Mens rea. The legal term, you know, the intent of the crime.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And we have a situation.
The mind of the thing.
Yes. Well, guys, it's almost 7.
This has been great.
I could go on.
Richard, thank you. Will you come back and chat with us sometime?
Yeah. You guys are wonderful, both of you. Not you too much.
That's right. You know me too well to say something like that on air.
It's wonderful to meet you all. And thank you. Thank you. Very, very fun discussion.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure to meet you. You're in Del Mar?
In Del Mar.
If somebody wanted to get a hold of you to hire you or to consult with you, what would they do?
Well, or drink red wine with you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They could call me. I'm pretty busy, so I don't have too much room in my schedule, but they could call me. And if I can be helpful, or at least steer them in the right direction, I will. So they can call me at 858-755-8717. I feel very good that the three of you there have piled up to protect people from avoiding being their best selves. So good job, guys.
Well said. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
So Scott, if people wanted to call you to figure out how to become their best self,
yeah.
Well,
what would they do?
I don't know if of course, if they want to become my opinion of their best self, I would be glad. No. that was so lame. I'm so sorry. My name is Scott Weiner. I'm a psychologist and attorney, and I'm in Del Mar is where I live. Solana Beach is where I work. I don't share a wall with you anymore, Sean, but we share an office. 619-417-5743. That's how you reach me. And Sean, how about you while we're at it?
Oh, well, if you want to resolve a conflict, and I don't care what kind of conflict it is, you just go to my website, WeberDisputeResolution.com. That's Weber with one B, DisputeResolution.com. And we'll match you with a mediator that'll help you resolve your conflict.
That's great.
And Mark, how do they get a hold of you to talk about their finances?
Well, if you have a financial issue related to divorce, best place to start would be my website, which is www.pacdivorce.com, PACDIVORCE.com.
All right, guys. It was a real pleasure.
Real pleasure.
Love talking to you.
Nice to meet you, Richard.
I'd love to keep talking, but I guess we got to stop at some point.
Delightful to meet you.
Delightful to meet you, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Three Wise Men of Divorce, Money, Psych, and Law. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share with others who may be in a similar place. Until next time, stay safe, healthy, and focused on a positive, bright future. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Every family law case is unique, so no legal, financial, or mental health advice is intended during this podcast. If you need help with your specific situation, feel free to schedule a time to speak with one of us for a personal consultation.